We'll proceed to the last case of the day, morning. United States v. Angela Lyles. Are you Mr. Spotswood?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
May it please the Court, I and my co-counsel, Jason Logue, are senior law students representing Ms. Lyles under a 7-Eleven license through the Bloom Legal Clinic at Northwestern University. The District Court abused its discretion by denying Ms. Lyles a short continuance she needed in order to obtain counsel of her choice, as was her right under the Sixth Amendment. Accordingly, this Court should vacate her conviction and remand for a new trial. When reviewing the denial of a continuance that implicates the Sixth Amendment right to choose your counsel, this Court looks at two key issues: the circumstances at the time the ruling was made and the reasons given by the trial judge for denying it. In this case, neither the circumstances nor his stated reasons supported the judge's decision. As a result, it was an abuse of discretion. I'd like to start by talking about the circumstances in this case. Looking at all of the salient circumstances, there are essentially four key things the Court needs to look at with respect to circumstances. That is, whether the continuance would have inconvenienced the parties, the witnesses, or the Court, whether the continuance was asked for in good faith, whether Ms. Lyles had previously replaced her counsel, and whether she was prejudiced by its denial. Now, with respect to those last two, it's fairly clear. She hadn't replaced her counsel before. This is the first time she was trying to swap out attorneys. And also, we know that she was prejudiced. She was denied her right to choose who would represent her. And even over and above that prejudice, there's the additional prejudice that she was forced to go to trial with an attorney she deeply distrusted.
Yeah, but wasn't one of the... I mean, you are not appealing. The Court ruled that she didn't... I mean, there was a motion made because she wanted a new appointed counsel, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the Court denied that, and that's not on appeal, is it?
That's not on appeal. What we're appealing is she made an order, and the Court never read that motion, we should be clear. The Court, when it heard her, the argument the next day, stated that it had never read the motion the night before. What it was proceeding on, the Court was looking at the oral motion she made. And on page 4 of the pretrial hearing transcript at A4 in our appendix, what she says is, I want 30 days to raise money to find a new attorney, or in the alternative, I want you to replace my counsel. So it's not just a question of, did she have a right to new appointed counsel? That's not what we're talking about. It's, did she have a right to pay for her own attorney to come in and take over in this case?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is her request for a new appointed counsel, you're saying the district judge didn't even read such a motion.
That's
so
true.
I guess I'm questioning why that isn't up on appeal as well, because one of the arguments you're making is she's forced to go with someone that she's filed the ABA complaint about, and I just thought it was odd that that wasn't appealed as well.
The reason we're not choosing to discuss that right now, Your Honor, is just because that involves a lot of facts about trial counsel's competency, where you really want additional evidence than what's in the record. And that also sort of ties into the ineffective assistance issue. That's more appropriately raised, in a 2255.
Okay. All right.
If she had the means and the inclination to hire a lawyer, she had many, many months to do that here before the date of the trial arrived.
Well, it's not necessarily clear, Your Honor, that being unable to do it early on in the case, where you don't necessarily know the costs of not having done so, means that she can't do it at the end of the case.
Well, but the cost, the judge found that these reasons that she was having problems with her lawyer were not justified.
Well, there's a distinction, I think, between saying, I think he's a competent attorney, and saying, I think you're misrepresenting anything by saying you don't trust him, by saying you don't like the way he's handling the case. The right to counsel of choice is not a right just to be represented by a competent attorney. It's the right to be represented, as the Supreme Court has said, by the counsel you want. You know, to be able to have someone you trust who is making the kind of decisions that you want them to be making. That's not true when we're talking about appointed counsel, but when she's saying, I want to raise money, maybe she could, you know, raise enough money even if she wasn't, you know, doing that at the outset, maybe once she's realized, and I think that's something that would be true of any of us.
Well,
if any of us were in the situation where maybe we distrusted our counsel before, but we thought maybe it'll work out, but it's the week before trial. They won't show us key motions or, you know, other documentary evidence. They can't discuss a theory of the case with us. You know, that kind of a situation, I think any of us would be scrambling to say, I want an attorney who can represent me in the way I think is appropriate.
Well, let's look at the timing, because May 10th is when she's charged. She's arraigned May 18th, and then let's fast forward 3 months. This is a status hearing when the court first learns of the problems between she and her appointed counsel, and O'Malley asked to withdraw and talks about the fact that your client doesn't appear and that kind of thing. And then she tells the court that she found out that O'Malley didn't want to represent her that day, that she was hurt because he didn't want to listen, and that he told her that she didn't have a defense. And at that time, the court denied the motion to withdraw, set the trial date on November 15th, but also told Lyles that she could get private counsel if she wanted to. So it's not like this dawned on her a week before the trial. This is like 2 months before the trial.
Your Honor, I believe it's a question of the stakes just escalating. You know, you can have the same concern, you know, a counsel 3 months ahead of time not being able to really explain what his theory of the case is going to be, not being, you know, not having, you know, walked you through everything, that might not be nearly as much of a concern as when you're in the week before trial. The same exact facts take on a whole new light once you're at that later stage in the proceedings. And I think that's a fairly reasonable thing. Ultimately, when we're trying to assess the impact of the late date, I think we need to look at how can that be relevant. And there are a few ways it can be relevant. It can be relevant because of inconvenience. But in this case, we know it wasn't going to inconvenience the parties because both the defendant and the government were supporting the motion. We know there's no reason to think it would inconvenience the witnesses who were local, and normally the parties object when the witnesses are inconvenienced. And the court never, in 11 pages of discussion, had anything to say about its docket or any inconvenience that would redound to the court. Normally when a court says, I don't want to give a continuance because it's so, you know, my docket doesn't allow it, the court will say so, and you don't see that here. So there isn't the sort of inconvenience that would be problematic. There also isn't, you know, the court acknowledged that she wasn't getting along with her counsel. The court never at any point suggested that this was being made up, that this was a ploy for delay. And that's important. You know, if the court looks at her and says, you know, my judgment of the credibility here is that this is a ploy for delay, that's a very appropriate basis for denying this sort of request. But we don't have that here. He talked about what other litigants might do, but not about what she might do. He talked about counsel's competence, but that's not very relevant to the key issue, which is she in good faith, displeased with her attorney, and everything in the record seems to suggest she was very displeased with Mr. O'Malley. And is there a sort of overriding inconvenience that justifies denying that request? And I submit that's not the case here. Now, unless Your Honors have further questions, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
Okay, fine. Thanks. Schneider?
May it please the Court, I'm Maggie Schneider, and I represent the United States in this appeal. The district court properly exercised its discretion when it denied Ms. Lyles' last-minute request for a continuance of the trial date to attempt to hire a private attorney in light of the circumstances that were before the court at the time that request was made. Those circumstances included Ms. Lyles' previous attempts to hire a private attorney and failures to do so, the fact that the request was made the day that the trial was set to begin, and the fact that the district court made a factual finding that Ms. Lyles' accusations toward her attorney were unfounded, and therefore that her request for a continuance to hire a new attorney was made in bad faith for purposes of delay. As the appellant points out, the issue to be considered on appeal is the circumstances for the ruling and the reasons given by the district court for the ruling. And looking at those circumstances, starting with the issue of whether it was bad faith, whether the request was made in bad faith, the appellant contends that it was not. I respectfully disagree. The district court made a finding, explicit finding, that Ms. Lyles' accusations against her attorney were unfounded.
Of course, even the government the counsel actually said the communication had broken down totally. He's never been asked to withdraw from another matter, that he didn't think he could defend her zealously with her attacking him. She had filed an ABA complaint. He said it was really disconcerting. And then the prosecutor started to say that he thought that the point was well taken and to basically agree with defense counsel in the court interrupted the prosecutor and said the accusations were unsupported.
Well, Your Honor, I believe the prosecutor's comments went more toward the question of whether Mr. O'Malley should have been allowed to withdraw and perhaps new appointed counsel given. The issue of whether a continuance should have been given to allow...
But when the court interrupted the prosecutor, stated that the accusations were unsupported, that if the accusations alone were enough to grant a continuance, then many cases would be continued unreasonably based on unfounded attacks on lawyers whom had done nothing wrong. So that's not just that the lawyer was incompetent. It was tied to, you know, the delay.
Well, yes, the district court's comments then after the prosecutor's comments did go toward the question of delaying for purposes of appointing a new attorney. And it's unclear from the record precisely what the prosecutor's comments went to, but the fact that the prosecutor may or may not have supported the request really is not at issue here. The issue is whether there was a good faith reason, whether there was any good reason to give this continuance, and based on the circumstances that were before the district court.
Well, there are factors the district court has to consider, like the inconvenience factor, and there's no mention by the district court about it being inconvenient. I mean, often the court will say, look, the jury's been notified, the jury's going to come in, there's no way to get to the jury. None of that was said by the court, right?
That's correct.
There's nothing that talks about why it was a big inconvenience for the court to kick this.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor. There was no explicit finding on the record of inconvenience. However, I would note that inconvenience is not necessarily a factor that must be considered. There's no Seventh Circuit case that says that there are specific factors that must be considered. In Santos, that was a factor that was considered. I would also point out that it's a fair inference from the fact that it was the day the trial was set to begin that there was at least some level of inconvenience to both the government and the court to be continuing a trial date at that point.
But the government didn't object.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And I don't want to overstate the inconvenience to the government, but I think it's somewhat obvious that there's a minimal level of inconvenience there. But there are also other factors that the court did consider that were appropriate factors given the Seventh Circuit case law. The fact that Ms. Lyles, the circumstances before the court were basically how this case had proceeded thus far. And Ms. Lyles, when she appeared for her arraignment, had said that she was going to obtain a private attorney, and she did. When she then appeared after the court gave her 30 days to do so, she had not hired a private attorney. Told the district court at that point she was financially unable to do so, and her appointed counsel was appointed at that point.
And are you aware of other cases that may be similar to this where because I am aware, having spent a lot of time on the district court, that it's not unusual that defendants would be unhappy with one thing or another that defense counsel does, but to file an ABA complaint, to have that on file, are you aware of other situations where that kind of complaint has been filed and this issue has been raised?
Your Honor,
either on getting new counsel or on delay?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of a case where an ABA complaint had been filed. I would note, however, that I think that issue really goes far more toward whether Ms. Lyles should have been granted a new appointed attorney, an issue that she chose not to appeal. And the issue that we're addressing here today is whether she should have gotten a continuance to hire a private attorney. And I would submit that the facts before the district court suggested that that was not going to happen. She was not going to be able to hire a private attorney, even if she was given the continuance that she sought. She had raised these same dissatisfactions, perhaps to a lesser degree, at the status hearing before the court almost 2 months before trial.
Of course, there were other options the court had, like appointing a new appointed counsel, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. And that was actually the primary basis of Ms. Lyle's motion. That motion was denied, and she didn't appeal that ruling. So we have to look at this in the light of whether or not there should have been a continuance for purposes of hiring a private attorney.
So you disagree with counsel's characterization that it was a motion for continuance or in the alternative to get new appointed counsel?
The written motion was solely for a new appointed attorney. And I would disagree.
A new appointed attorney.
A new appointed attorney. And I know that the appellant says that the judge did not read that motion. The record shows that the judge had not received it prior to court. He was handed a copy during court. It's unclear from the record at that point whether he'd paused to read it or not, but I don't know that it's clear from the record that he did not read it. But putting aside that issue, the only point at which the new appointed, the issue of a continuance to hire a new attorney came up was basically one sentence during this colloquy with the court about whether she should get a new appointed attorney, at which point I think when it became clear that she was not going to get a new appointed attorney, she then said, well, can I at least have 30 days to try to raise some money to hire a private attorney? And I think at that point that the district court appropriately exercised its discretion and said, in light of the circumstances, the prior procedure of the case, the fact that Ms. Lyles had been admonished at least twice about the fact that she could obtain a private attorney if she wished to do so, that an attorney would be given leave to appear on her behalf if she brought in a private attorney, and that had never happened, even though these problems had arisen previously. And so the district court at that point exercised its discretion and said, I'm not giving you an appointed attorney, and I don't see a basis for a continuance, so we're going to go forward with the trial today. Actually, he gave them until the next day and just resolved pretrial motions that day, although that was the day that the trial was supposed to begin. And just with this issue of whether the request for a continuance at that point was made in good faith, the district court's findings, I think the reasonable inference from what he said is that he did find that her accusations were being made in bad faith for purposes of delay. He found that they were unfounded and then went on to say one way that one can get basically unwarranted continuances is to make such accusations. And while he didn't direct the statement directly at Ms. Lyles, I think it's the fair and reasonable interpretation of what he said, that he was making a finding that her accusations were being made.
Let me ask you this. What else would a defense counsel need to say for denial of a continuance to be an abuse of discretion? Because the attorney had already said he wanted to withdraw and did not think he could defend her zealously.
Well, those comments, I think, go to whether he should have been allowed to withdraw, and that's not the issue here. Mr. O'Malley never said that if he were going to be required to go forward as her attorney, that he wasn't prepared. The only time he mentioned not being prepared was at the very beginning, and that was in the context of the fact that this motion had been filed, and he wanted to address that first. Beyond that, beyond the discussions of the personal problems that they were having, he never said, as a matter of being ready for trial, that he couldn't represent her. And I think the record shows that he did represent her vigorously, and in fact, she was acquitted of one of the four counts. So I don't think the record shows that the relationship had deteriorated so badly that they were unable to function as attorney and client. So the question, I don't think, is what Mr. O'Malley or the trial counsel needed to say. I think it's what Ms. Lyles needed to show in order to have obtained this continuance that she was seeking to hire a private attorney. And I think the facts before the district court showed that she was not going, if she were given the continuance, it would have essentially been an exercise in futility. They would have come back 30 days later, and she probably would not have obtained a new attorney, and they would have been back to square one. So in light of the facts before the district court, he appropriately denied the request for a continuance in order to obtain a new trial counsel and a new hired attorney, and that's the issue before the court on appeal. And unless there are further questions, I would respectfully request that the conviction in the district court be affirmed.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Now, are we going to hear from Mr. Spotswood or Mr. Logue?
Mr. Logue.
Okay. What time we got? Got a couple minutes. I'll let you finish.
Thank you, Your Honor. The government made two assertions in particular that I'd like to rebut. The first is that Ms. Lyles did not necessarily ask for both an appointed counsel and time to hire a new counsel. And I think if we turn exactly to the November 15th transcript, we can see that, in fact, if you look there at page 4, lines 11 through 13, she asked first for time for 30 days to hire a new counsel, time to raise money to hire counsel, and then second, in the alternative, she asked for the court to assign her another attorney.
Does the record tell us how many civil and criminal cases this judge had pending?
No, Your Honor, it doesn't. The record is silent.
How about the trial calendar for this particular week?
The trial calendar is not in the record, and I haven't looked at it specifically, Your Honor.
You did look?
No, I have not looked at it, Your Honor.
This is pretty much a discretionary call that the district court has to make, and one of the important considerations that a judge would make is whether, if I don't try this case, I have another one I have to try starting tomorrow or starting this afternoon. So it's a little easier to grant an adjournment then or grant a continuance request for whatever reason if you've got something else going on. But if the judge had couple of days reserved just to try this case, and if he lets these people walk out of the courtroom, he's got two or three, 4 days or something where he's going to have a dark court. That's a very important consideration if you've got a lot of cases to juggle on a very active district court calendar.
I agree, Your Honor. It is a very important consideration, but I think as Judge Williams pointed out, the trial court didn't mention anything specifically about calendar. So it's hard for us sitting here now to determine whether or not the court even had any level of inconvenience. There may be a situation where having a few extra days would have benefited the court if the court was particularly time-crunched. Even assuming there is some presumption of inconvenience, I think that presumption has to be weak in an instance where the court, through 11 pages of trial transcript, didn't once mention its docket as a reason for denying the continuance. I see that my time has expired, Your Honor. May I briefly conclude?
Sure.
Neither the circumstances surrounding the request nor the trial court's stated rationale supported a decision to deny the continuance in this case. In fact, in light of all the circumstances, it was an abuse of discretion to do so. We ask this court vacate Ms. Lyle's conviction and remand this case for a new trial. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks to both counsel, and certainly thanks to both of you for taking on the case, and you're the sponsor, so thank you for letting us take advantage of their talent. Good job, both of you. That completes the argument for today. The case court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.